And let's give a rousing welcome for our warm-up speaker, Mark. I'm taking it in because it's surreal. I mean, I wasn't supposed to be here. A year and a half ago, I wasn't supposed to be here. It was the last place I thought I'd be. But my commitment on Friday nights, I ran into Monty, and he asked me to do this with him. It's an honor and privilege not only be up here, but to be sharing in his special day, because true miracles happen here. He's proof of that. I like doing this one. I like being anywhere with the guy. We ran the campuses of Tulare Union right up the road in the 80s. Experienced a lot of those ditch bank parties that we do. I ran into him when I came out of the rehab at a party at David Grossel's house, and we did a little catching up and where he'd been. And we went to dinner before this. I was driving here thinking of my thoughts on him, and I'll give a good example of the miracle of this place is that I'll call him the $3 million man, and the reason why I call him that is because if it costs $60,000 or $70,000 a year to keep a guy in prison, times 40 years, times what he's paying in today, it's a net $3 million, and that's the miracle of this. And he has an 11-year-old daughter that he alienated at one point that I spent time with them. Our daughters spent time together. She looks at him like an absolute hero. So that's what the miracle this thing can do. And every city, every state, every country where there's Alcoholics Anonymous, there's stories like Monty and myself and all of you out there. A little bit about myself. I have exactly 16 months sober today. My sobriety date is August 9th, 2015. And my home group is Serenity Seekers 10 a.m. meeting in Visalia on Lover's Lane. And I call it that because I'm involved in a lot of groups, and I take service in a lot of groups, but just connected there. You know, it's one I try not to miss. It's one that Sundays is kind of a depressing day. It's just a good meeting where there's a lot of things going on there for me that feeds into me, and then I could go take it to my other places, what I learned there. I came about it. I drank or used. And I did a couple drugs, too, you know. I'm going to keep it real. Started at 16. A lot of things happened at 16 for me. You know, you're approaching high school. I got my driver's license. I got drunk for the first time right about that time. I got my driver's license. I got laid. A lot of things were happening, you know, all the good things that you like. And I got arrested for the first time for a minor public intoxication. And I remember going to a place called, many of you guys know this place, Alternative Services. They give me a quiz, and I either failed or passed that test, however you looked at it. And the guy said, you might have a real problem. And all the fun shit that was happening, I'm looking at it, and I said, you know what, sir, I might have an addiction, but it's no problem. I took that attitude for a long time. I was a heavy drinker. In 1996, June 30th, I had my first sobriety date with the help of David C. out there. He guided me. I saw the fun he was having in sobriety. I thought I could do it. I just went to one meeting a week. That was a Lano club. I made it my party. I didn't work any steps. I didn't get in a book. But I got dry, and that was really cool. But I listened to some old-timers. God bless them, man. They were sober, but they told me, just don't drink, you know. And if you got to smoke a joint, smoke a joint. Just don't drink. Drinking's your problem. I took that to heart. When I got a cold or I had trouble sleeping, I would take NyQuil because there was alcohol in there, but it just didn't make me go to do what I did, you know. And that was 29, stayed dry a lot of years from, you know, the whiskey and beer that I drank. And what happened to me, I left those meetings. I took off with a girl. I left the wife, took off with a girl. And you know, NyQuil's okay. A joint's all right. And pills are even better. And I discovered all that. And that's hit me to another 20 years of my near death, you know. And back to drinking, closet drinking. So the way I did it was, my thinking never got, as I reflect back on it, my thinking never got clear. My thinking never got corrected. This program isn't about quitting, using, or drinking. It's about getting your thinking right. That's apparent to me now. It's about gratitude. It's about getting the disease. You know, the alcohol is a solution. Our thinking is the problem. And I did a lot of things to medicate myself over the years. And it, I don't want to go through the divorces and in between and having a baby at 40 and the shit that happens to us. But I'll just tell you, the last 3 months, I was up to, I'm embarrassed to say the amount I was spending on what I was doing. The way my drinking went, I start off wanting to get a buzz, and then it progressed very quickly to blackout drinking. And in the end, I just wanted to be anesthetized, man. I just didn't want to feel. I didn't want to feel any pain. I didn't want to feel any depression. I didn't want to feel anything. Nothing. Couldn't figure out how I got to that point. And I'm like the rest of you. You know, I'm just like you guys, man. I'm closed in. I'm against the wall. I'm trying to fight, but I don't know how to quit. I have no idea how to quit. I'm not coming to these meetings. I'm sure in the fuck not going to rehab. So I didn't know what to do, you know, and the cops removed me from my house one night, and I didn't do anything real bad. I was just drunk. I was drunk, and I was stoned, and I was high. They removed me. I didn't have anywhere to really go. I didn't want to call on immediate family, so I stayed a week in a motel. I ended up in a room behind my dad's house. He goes, "I'll take you in. I love you no matter what you do. You know, you're a good kid. I don't care if you keep doing what you're doing. I hope you don't, but I don't think you're going to get it, so I'm going to love you in spite of it." My cousin came. I figured it was going to take me 5 days to get right before I could make it back to work. I was looking at a long weekend. I'm going to be right in 5 days and kick all this shit. My now separated, estranged wife, she went to that room. She goes, I know there's stuff in here, and she was good at finding it all. I go, "Please don't take that. Please don't take that stuff." And she took it, and it was about 3 hours later I started getting deathly ill. Thank God my dad had a refrigerator. There was 7 cases of beer back there, and I took them down in 5 days. So I stayed drunk morning, noon, and night. My cousin comes and he goes, "You need help?" I go, "I'm not getting help. I don't know what to do." He goes, "Well, you can't come back, you know, because everybody's scared for you." My counselor had called my doctor, said, "Quit prescribing." I called to fire him. I go, "You broke my anonymity." And he goes, "Not when you're intervening on a death." I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "I gave you about a month." So through all that, the only thing that got me to rehab was my cousin did tell me, he researched and they were going to take me to detox and give me some good drugs to get off the good drugs, you know, and that was appealing to me. She had took the shit. I'm 3 days kicking that. I'm kicking alcohol. I go, "All right, I'll take the ride." Went to a place called Five East, a detox center in Santa Barbara, part of the Cottage Health System. I got there. I told them I'd go under one circumstance. I'll give you a phone number, get me my shit, and pack your ice chest, and I'll go for the ride. And he got me my shit, and he reluctantly hands it to me. And I touched both of them down, both those pill bottles, like they were shots. And I think I was trying to take a lethal dose. And it was a lethal dose, but I had a lot of... I was immune to it at that point. I was just dead. I got in there as a bad patient. They weren't going to let me into the Five East because the vitals looked bad. I remember them saying, "Your heart rate's 31. You know, we got to take you to the other hospital before we get there." I'm not going to die. That's for fools. I got to just get me up there because I got one thing on my mind, and that's to get more shit. The con wasn't over. Didn't want to quit. I didn't want to quit. I didn't go wanting to quit. This is God-given sobriety date. I didn't choose it. I didn't want to quit. And I got in there, and about 3 a.m., I remember there's a Filipino guy, you know, the nurse, and I go, "I need to get in my bag." And he goes, "What do you need?" And I go, "Underwear." He goes, "Well, you're wearing some." I go, "I need some new ones or some kind." I get in there, and I'm thinking, surely I must have left a bottle of NyQuil or some loose stuff fell in there through my travels. And he's got a flashlight over me as I'm going through my leg. They don't let us have our luggage there, you know. And he goes, "Do you got drugs in the bag?" "I got drugs in the bag. We're all going to die, you know." And I go, "I hope I do, you know." And so, days go into days, and the way we do, they do H&I, and there's people in these rooms that keep that going. And I know how important that is to us in the early going. It's incredible. I didn't get serious about it until about 17 days in. I'm now off the detox. I'm in a place, and we go to this Mexican food mart every day with staff. You know, they've taken us to meetings. I'm not paying attention. Don't want to go. I get that Mexican food, Mark, and this is where I did a first step unconsciously and informally, but it was profound. I got in there and I kept staring at the 40s, you know, staring at the 40s, and it's a cold day in Santa Barbara, I'm wearing a puffy jacket, and I go, there's not cameras in there, it's an old place, and I could get two of them in there, and I'll just throw a 10 on the counter so I didn't really steal it, and that's not on my conscience. And I didn't do it, but I was going to plan it for the next day. And a thought occurred to my mind, that if I do those two beers, what the hell am I going to do then? I would have to go steal 10 more, and I would go have to hit the streets. And that's when my first step, I said, you know, I'm powerless over alcohol. My life has become unmanageable. Man, I didn't say it in those words. There were some F words and things are effed up and, you know, my life has become effed up and I can't do anymore. So my covers were pulled. I went to speaker meeting in Santa Barbara. That's why I can't believe that I'm up here for Monty tonight, because those guys, I mean, you know, those are circuit dudes. They're coming up in a Mercedes Benz. Guy wearing an Armani suit and a guy named Ahmad, you know, and he's an attorney in Beverly Hills. He's telling the story. It looked a little phony to me, all right? And you get in the line afterwards to greet him. And he was talking about how he drove in a blackout to the Mexican border and I had to go one up him and tell him I crossed the border, you know, and I did shit there that he would never think about doing. And he goes, "How'd that work out for you, dude?" I go, "Not too good. I'm here." I came back to Visalia. I held out for about 5 days. Didn't want to be with you guys. Didn't like it here. I'm going to just do it on my own again. Just go dry. About 5 days, I was so miserable. I got a meeting list, and I end up at Christ Lutheran. There's a guy here in this room. He's right back there, man. He's smiling at me. He's shaking my hand. It's Domingo, you know. He goes, "Hey, what's your name?" And I go, "Mark. I was there in 96, and been using and doing my shit ever since." He goes, "Thanks for going out, man, so I don't have to." He goes, "You teach me what not to do." And I caught my first resentment here. Motherfucker, you know. And I went home, and he did it out of love, you know. He really did it out of love. He was so sincere. He was so sincere. And that dude kept me going back to that meeting, and there was people that kept me going, and they were telling me stuff like, you know, "I wanted this and I wanted that. I didn't want to get divorced. I didn't want the health problems I was getting. I didn't want any of it." And people kept saying, you know, "God will give you what you need, not what you want." You know, and that's still today, you know, that's true. I was just having a breakdown a week ago, just ask her. So, you know, what do I want? You know, I want to hit that lottery when I hit $1 billion. I wanted that. I could use some Hawaiian Tropic models. That'd be nice. But instead, the Lord gives me Aloha Ken, you know. He gave me what I needed and not what I wanted. And now I want them, you know. Best fucking thing that ever happened to me here. And it goes on, you know. And it goes on. There's the Monies. There's the Lohas. There's the Ray J. There's the Catherine. And there's a whole... They're everywhere. You know, everywhere I look. Me and Gary share the same sobriety date. I've been able to work with a couple newcomers. I couldn't even... You know, when you're thinking someone like this guy's got a word, when it goes to A, it's so spiritual and so, it is so important to give back what you got. And that's the whole message, give back what you got. You ain't perfect. I'm now doing things called gratitude lists, conscious contact with the God of my understanding. It's getting me through the days, you know, and I can feel physically and mentally myself healing every day. And I have rough patches. I didn't want to do those steps. I wanted to get straight to the chapter of vision for you and not do any of it before that. I like the vision. The vision's cool. But how it works and the family afterward, that all sucks. You know, my favorite verse in that is the age of miracles is still with us. I believe it is. Nobody's going to tell me it's not. It could be that way till they take us to the grave. A year and 4 months, that's not a long time, but in some ways it's a freaking eternity, you know. It is an eternity. 50 years old, man. I turned 50 years old. 50 years is a long time, man. And when I woke up on my 50th birthday alone in my house, I said, 50 years flew, you know. 50 years is flew. And this year, in January 10th, my baby turns 10, and that 10 years is flew. But the 8 years remaining, I got to pay child support. That's a fucking eternity, man. And time is weird here. You know, time is weird. You know, one day, 1 minute, 1 hour at a time. And one second is no time. 1 second is no time. But 1 second is all it takes is to pick up again. 1 second. 1 second is what it takes to swerve into that middle road and kill a family when you didn't intend to, because you're a good person, but you're just sick, you know. And 1 second is what it takes to get a gun, man, intoxicated, and pull the trigger, you know, like that. That's 1 second. 1 second is no time. But, you know, we measure time here. Just take it one day at a time. Hey, thanks for hearing me out. You're in for a real treat.
I'd like to thank Mark for his warm-up. He did a great job. And now let's give a rousing Tulare County welcome for our featured speaker, Monty.
My name's Monty, and I'm an alcoholic. And a whole lot of other things. My sobriety birth date is December 28th, 2006. I got arrested on the 27th of December in 2006. I didn't want to stop partying at that time. I didn't want to be pulled over that day. It was like in the movies. You know, they didn't care that I was drunk. They wanted what I had in my car. And I was drinking Beef Eaters. That's my drink. I've been drinking Beef Eaters since I was about 14. It got me served in bars. I think the bartenders thought that if I was crazy enough to be ordering a Beef Eaters on the rocks, that I must be 21. I say it worked. So, but you know, in this program here, man, it's given me a life that I didn't even know that I could get, man. You know, I thought the life that I deserved was a prison cell that was about 10.5 feet long by about 5.5 feet wide. You know, that's what I thought my life was going to be for the rest of it. And I want to thank hospitals and institutions for coming into that prison that I was at. I want to thank my Uncle David Looper for not giving up on me. If it hadn't been for that man and a higher power and that man that came into an H&I, I wouldn't be here today. Okay, and I would be dead a long time ago if it hadn't been for all the times that the Tulare Police Department, the Tulare County Sheriffs intervened and put me in jail. You know, I went kicking and screaming. I tried to run, but I ain't very fast. I don't know. It seems like when they're chasing behind you, it's like you got bricks on your feet or something, man. At least that's how it was for me. So we get accomplishments in this program. Like, you know, normal people, you know, you just get a driver's license. I didn't get my first one until I was 25. Why? Because I got pulled over around the corner from my Aunt Marilyn's house. And we had like 50 beers in the ice chest. We were smashed, and I was driving, and the cop did not give me a DUI. My friend was over 21 years old. They didn't give him any charges. They made us pour out every beer. Oh, my God. Party foul. You know what I mean? I didn't even know that saying back then, but it was hard to do, man. It sucked. But I called my Aunt Marilyn. That was like one of the craziest phone calls. I did not want to call her. I definitely didn't want to call my mother, you know, and thank you, Aunt Marilyn, for coming and picking me up, man. And another accomplishment right here, man, this is a completion of parole. Okay, on 4/30/2014, I became free for the first time since like 1983. Okay, so I've had problems with drugs and alcohol. I used drugs before I ever wanted to use drugs. I don't know if you can understand that, but I have some cousins and a sister that are crazy, and they thought it was real cute to take a power hitter. You know, those that don't know what a power hitter, you put a joint inside it, and then you put it back in there, and you squeeze it, and it blows smoke out. Well, I'm asleep. I was a good kid. You know, I played soccer and baseball. I did good in school. I actually liked school then. Something happened after that night. I lost all ambitions. I, you know, when I woke up, I was coughing, and they're all laughing. I'm like, well, what happened? And I was stoned. And I said, well, I might as well try it on my own doing. And that was the downfall. Marijuana is a drug. Okay, I'm living proof of that. From that day forward, I wanted more. Okay? I took drinks, off a little bit of beer here and there. You know, I played waiter when mom and them were playing poker or whatever they were doing. You know, I was a little waiter. I'd go there, and they were having fun, so I took a little sip, and, man, I got really having fun, you know what I mean? It made me feel like I was a real waiter. I was getting chips and everything. But, like, something like this piece of paper right here matters, man. This matters. This is going to get me to go back inside prison. You know, I'm hoping, man. I put in my application to go back in and give back what has been freely given to me, man. And I said, freely given to me. Because the man that drove 2.5 hours to that prison that I was at, each direction, to carry that meeting there, he didn't get paid for that. He didn't get compensated for his gas. He didn't get compensated for nothing. But he got the greatest gift, man. He got to see me get sober. I already had 3.5 years when I met this guy. I wasn't working a program. This guy's name's Wayne, man. He had about 32 years at the time. And he changed my life. Okay? He changed my life completely. He asked me, he says, are you willing to do the steps? My brain said to tell him that I'd already done them. I wanted to lie. You know? Fear's kicking in. I don't want him to know that I don't read that well. You know? But the words that come out of my mouth was, yes, I am. So he made a deal with me, man, that if I would do the work, he came every other Thursday or every other Wednesday night, and he said, we'll do a step each week. So you have 2 weeks to write. He says, and you know, you can become free even though you're a prisoner. I wanted to be free, you know. But I didn't know what he meant by truly free until I completed them steps. After I got to my sixth step, and he told me how fucked up, excuse my language, he told me how messed up I was. You know, I had all these defects of character. I thought I was perfect. You know, and he pointed out a whole bunch of stuff that I put down on my fifth step, you know, and told me that I was hateful. I was a racist. I was a womanizer. I was a thief. He named off all this stuff, man. I'm like, man, you got that out of that? He's like, yeah. He says, you put it on paper. You know, and now it's time to fix that stuff, man. And we're going to ask somebody into this, and we're going to ask your higher power into this to help remove these defects of character. And he says, I guarantee you, man, that you keep pushing forward, that these guards are going to see the change. And it happened. You know, my light bulb came on in prison, man. I'm watching guys. We had bottles of vodka. I mean, half-gallon bottles of vodka in there, man. I mean, we were at a fire camp, man, and there was no fences. So it was a big party, you know. And I stayed sober through all that, thanks to Wayne, thanks to my higher power. You know, but I did all my steps, and my whole life changed, man, while I was in prison. Okay, so I'm going to back up, and I'm going to go back, and I'm going to give you a little experience on how bad I got. I mean, really, you should know how bad I got, because I spent 17 years in prison.
Let's go way back. I've been where you first.
Yeah, I've known that guy since we were kids. Like I said, I started at about 14, 13 years old, and I found out that I liked everything that could make me not let you know who I was. Okay? It made me become the life of the party. It made me be able to hang out with all the guys that had nice cars, because I come from a family that my mom was on welfare. She worked two jobs, and, you know, she had three kids that she had to raise, and she did the best she could do, man. I wouldn't trade her in for nobody. I love my mom to death. You know, a man's worst nightmare is to lose her when he's locked up, and that happened to me, man. You know, she asked me, they let me make a couple phone calls, and she asked me if I'd do her a favor. She said, I've never asked nothing of you. And she really never did. She let me do whatever I wanted to do. And she said, will you get out and get your life together? I had to really think about that. You know, because alcohol and drugs were my everything. I didn't know what a life was. I knew how to do prison time. I knew how to manipulate and get what I wanted with a bag, you know, and stuff like that. But But I like I said, I've been sober since 2006, December 28th. So, and I'm getting my life together now. And it's with every people in here. There's so many faces in here, people that have touched my life. You know, especially when I was out there drunk and tore up. You know, I remember hearing her story. You know, and you know, I'm like, man, okay, I'm gonna get bad like that if I continue. You know, and now she's a lady. Hey, she's a lady, man. I love her, man. You know what I mean? And I tell people that she's a lady, man. I look up to her. You know, she's a hero that I look up to. You know, I look around this room, man. All these people, man, are here to hear this message, man, of hope, of change. You know, and that's what this is all about, is change, man. You know, back in 2005, man, I was driving a car that had no windshield in it. Because my car, my other car was broke. And I needed to go and get some drink, and I needed to go and get the bag, man. And because that comes hand in hand with me. You know, in the third tradition of this program, it says the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. But if you go back and you read it in there where it talks about, in the second year of this program, they had all these rules and regulations, all this stuff that they had. Man, you had to be like this alcoholic that was like up here. You couldn't be from the street. You couldn't have other problems. You couldn't be gay. You couldn't be any of that. If you're any of that, you're out. That's what it was like in the second year. And I want to thank them guys that when they got a knock on the door, because that guy was me, man. The guy that's standing up here right now was kind of like that guy that knocked on the door that wanted to be a member. But he had outside issues. Also, not just alcohol. And these three guys, the one guy said, well, I don't know, you know, God, fear. You know, fear. They didn't want, well, what are people going to say if we let him join? You know, and so they talked, man. They asked, what would the master do? They asked, what would the master do? So right now I want to bring my higher power into this room and let him know that I want to thank him for changing their way of thinking and turning AA the way that it's turned. You know, because look at everybody that's in here, man. We come from all walks of life, man. I don't have to politic in here no more, man, at all. I can be a free man. I don't got to hurt anybody no more. Sometimes I make mistakes and people get hurt. You know, feelings are a mother turkey, man. You know, they're real. They're not facts. They change. You know, and so the life that I live today, man, is I try to help people everywhere I go. You know, there's four paradoxes, man, that I try to live by, man. The first one is we surrender to win. This one really blows me away, you know, because it says we got to give away to keep it, you know. But I know what it means, man. What's been freely given to me, man, I got to give it back. It also says that if we don't give it back, like it was freely given to us, we will get drunk again. It doesn't say you might, it says you will. I didn't write much on the next one, man, but I don't write notes very good. It says, we suffer to get well. You know what I mean? I suffered all my life. I thought I was having a blast, man. You couldn't, back in the day, you couldn't convince me that I wasn't, that you couldn't tell me that I was suffering, because I didn't think I was suffering at all. You know, health problems are starting to happen. You know, we can't hardly see, man. You know, these things. The one that I like the most, man, is we got to die in order to live, man. Okay, and I'm going to share a story with you about my daughter. She's my everything, okay? She comes before anybody, period. Okay, anybody. She's number one. Okay? Now, I have a relationship with a higher power, and he knows that I serve him. But my daughter is my priority. Okay, and she asked me about, I've been out about 18 months. You know, and when I first got out, man, I was going to do it my way. You know, I was going to force this. They're going to let me see her, man, period. You know, they're just going to be my way. And thank God some people love me enough to tell me to take the cotton out of my ears and put it in my mouth. You know what I mean? And I listened. You know, there's a guy in here that said, you don't know nothing until you got 10 years. Well, I got like, I'm coming up on 10 years real quick, so maybe I won't be knowing something here pretty quick. I've got 3,634 days. A man that I idols, man, had, if he was still alive today, he would have had 11,348 or 98. I can't really see that. I think it's 98 days. That's David Looper. You know, he was a man that believed in the AA book, and he lived by it. He wasn't perfect. Now, he might tell you he was. You know what I mean? And he might tell you that he don't use the F word, but that was one of his favorite words. You know what I mean? And, you know, it was. I've known him all my life. You know, and I love him to death. You know, we all have defects. And we have the ones that we can't see. And they cause havoc with people that really wanted to be our friends. You know, that wanted to help each other. You know, and you know, it was fear, man, that I might be cooler than you, I think. Or, man, he's cooler than me, man, and so I just got a rhythm or something. That's what I think was going on. You know what I mean? And because I'm going to tell you what, him and another man that's in this room have helped. Well, there's a few of them, man, that have helped me tremendously over the years. That if it wouldn't have been for him, I remember in 1998, Ole took a ride with me to my apartment, and he told me that if I don't get out where I'm living at, I will get loaded again. He told me that, man. I didn't listen to nothing. And I had a job that I could have moved somewhere else, but I went right back where I was comfortable. You know, right in the ghetto. Right where I was comfortable at. But back to the die or live thing. You know, in order to live, you got to die. My daughter tells me, man, at about 18 months out, she ain't calling me dad yet. That's my name for her now, is dad. See, I earned that. She calls me daddy. That was my Christmas present almost 2 years ago. Yeah, man, that tore me up. She told me, she says, Dad, or she says, Monty, you know, she slipped a few times, but she's like, Dad, I mean, Monty, you ain't nothing like what Mom and Grandma say about you. Oh, man, my brain wanted to eat that one up. Oh, man, I want to start throwing stones. But if you live in a glass house, you can't really throw stones, you know. But I was able to use something that this brain remembered. I told her, well, Kaylee, what Mom and Grandma told you was the truth. I said, but that guy died and this new guy is born. And she's like, in church, like get baptized? I said, exactly. That's exactly what happened. And that fourth one is a biblical, it comes right out of the Bible. Okay, so this ain't a religious program. It's a spiritual program. Religion is for people who are afraid to go to hell. And religion is for people who have already lived in hell. I mean, I think I got it backwards. Something like that. Religion is for people afraid to go to hell, and spirituality is for people who have already lived in hell. And that's my life. You know, but back to that car with no windshield, man. I'm driving down over in Goshen, California, man. I went to the store and I was meeting the my boy over there, and well, I had to go to Woodlake, you know, from Goshen to Woodlake with no windshield. You know what I mean? Hey, I had on a helmet and goggles. You know what I mean? And the car hadn't been tagged in like 12 years. You know? But I wasn't even worried about the law because I'm invincible, right? I mean, I had all that power in me. I can go anywhere. But and I turned the corner from the Tulare, the Goshen Village Apartments, man. And damn, there's a sheriff there. I'm like, oh, God, I hope he'll see me. You know what I mean? And I go by him. And I got no windshield. I got on God. I mean, I got Scott. I got motorcycle goggles on with a Belmont 03 helmet. That's what I'm rolling in. All right? And I drive all the way to Woodlake. Bugs are smashing me and stuff. I meet my buddy over there. We meet him at this little store right there. And I give me a bottle, and he gives me what he gives me. And it was a whole lot, man. And I'm driving back like, ain't nothing wrong, you know? It's all good. You know, I got that alcohol. I'm telling you, alcohol, I didn't fear nothing when I drank, man, nothing. Nothing at all, man. That's what he did for me. And then you add the other shit with it. Oh, my goodness. You think you can fly. You know, so I went to Woodlake, and I'm coming back. And, man, that sheriff's still sitting in the same spot. He couldn't believe what he seen when he drove by. So he waited there to see if I'd come back. You know? And here I come, and I drive right by him. Oh. Lights turn on. I'm like, oh, I hope he ain't pulling me over. You know, that's what I'm hoping. He turns the lights on, and I'm like, oh, shit, he's pulling me over. So I pull over, you know? And he comes up. He's like... He started to go to the driver's side, and he goes around the passenger's side. He's like, how you doing tonight? I'm like, I couldn't hear you, man. What'd you say? He's like, how are you doing tonight, sir? So I'm doing great. Real good. Real good. He's like, Monty Staples, how have you been? He knew my name because I got a, you know, that's the image that I have portrayed to all these cops around this area. They know me as a drug addict. You know, that's just all there is about it, man. And when I say drugs, I'm talking alcohol. Okay, I drink, I use, it all comes together. Okay, and he says, what are you doing? I'm like, I went to the store and I'm coming back and I'm trying to get home. He's like, you don't have a windshield in your car. I'm not even thinking about the windshield. He's like, what are you doing? You don't even have a windshield. You got a helmet on with goggles. I said, well, it's not against the law, right? I didn't know if it was. He's like, Mr. Staples, do you have any wants, warrants, or holds? I said, no, I don't, Your Honor. Officer. And he's like, I'm pretty faded on some beef eaters, man. And he's like, let me go run your name and I'll be back. He said, I'm not going to search your vehicle if you don't have no wants, warrants, or holds. But I want to talk to you. So he goes back to the car, runs the plate, he comes back. He's like, you know this car hasn't been tagged in 12 years? I'm like, man, a good friend of mine let me borrow it, man. My car broke down. And he tells me, okay, you're not under arrest. I don't even want to search the car at all. I want to talk to you. Can you get out of the car? You know, fear is all over me, man. I've lived in fear all my life. And, you know, don't let them let you see a sweat. Well, I was sweating that night because I had like a half a pound in the car. And, got that bottle of beef eaters, man. And I can smell it, and I'm drunk, you know what I mean? And he's like, did I spill my little cup? Well, he says, how much stuff do you have in your car? I told him the truth. He says, you know that you're ruining your life. He says, I'm not going to arrest you. He says, I'm not going to put you in jail. He says, because you're going to put yourself there. You know, and, I'm like, he says, do you want some help? No? No, I don't. I said, I don't think I got a problem. And he's like, oh my God, dude, you're a wreck, dude. He says, I've been seeing you for years, man. He says, you have a major problem. We talked for about 10 minutes, man, and he let me go. And I drove back to my house, man, and my friends heard it on the scanner, like, dude, man, what happened? I'm like, dude, man, the damnest thing, man. He let me go. He even knew there were drugs in the car. And they're like, wow. And all, but anyways, that's the kind of shit I did. You know, I did something else crazy in Texas. You know, these are things that stand out because I think I blacked out a lot sometimes. And all the times I forgot anything. But in the state of Texas, I've been arrested out there too. You know, I've been arrested in Florida. I've actually been put in jail in Mexico. I've been to jail a few different places in California. I've been to about 8 different prisons in the state. Like he said, man, they spent a lot of money housing me. You know, this last term, I did 7 years for a half ounce, and I should have had a DUI. I would have probably blew over a 2.0. That's how drunk I was that day. That was normal. If you know my family, the Loopers, we can drink. You know, we drink a lot. I don't know why, how we do it, but it's just, I mean, you get immune to that stuff. You know, and I can't explain it. Like, I got out of jail many times and said that I was not going to drink again, period. I'm not going to do it, I swear. As soon as I got into Larry, man, I'd get something to drink. You know, I never made it 24 hours out of jail. I tried, but it just didn't work that way. You know, I tried to, anyway, back to Texas. I go to Texas, man. I wake up one day, man. I think the SWAT team's after me, the FBI, the whole nine yards, man. And I tell my friend, I got to get out of here, man. They're going to get me, man. And he says, well, where are you going to go? I said, I'm going to call my dad. I've never asked him for nothing in my entire life. And I'm going to ask him if I can come live with him. And I called him up, man. And Jesus, I can't believe the shit I did. He says, I got to talk to my wife. I'm like, really? You got to talk to your wife? I'm your son, man. What do you mean you got to talk to your wife? Well, you don't love me? You don't care about me? What do you mean you got to ask your wife? You're the man of the house. You know, that's how selfish I am. You know what I mean? That's how my brain ticks. It doesn't think like that no more, man. At all. I'm not a selfish person at all today. You know, I give, man, to help people. You know, my daughter, man, if she needs something, man, I don't even question her mom, man. I just do it. The brain questions it, but I don't say nothing, man. It's just easier, just no problem. Sure. I'll be there at about 6 o'clock when I get up work with whatever you want me to get her. How about I just bring you the money and you go get it? It's just easier that way, man. But my dad calls me back 2 days later and says that Cindy said I could come. And I'm like, all right, man. I said, can you buy me a ticket? He says, you can't get the money to come. It's, you know, I'm like, I probably can. So I do some hustling and I come up with some money and I buy me this ticket, man. And I get all my clothes and I put a bicycle in a box and with all my clothes around it and stuff to send it out there so I'd have some wheels when I got there, you know what I mean? And I put everything, got down to the bus station and got on the bus in Visalia, man, and we stopped in Goshen. We stopped in Tulare. I've seen too many cop cars, man. I jumped off that bus in Tulare, man. All my clothes went to Texas, everything I owned. It's like, hey, that's some brilliant thinking, you know what I mean? Called my dad, and I told him, hey, you might want to go down there to get that stuff, my clothes and everything's over there. I don't got no clothes now. He says, what do you mean? He says, you're supposed to be on the bus. So I can't make it. I can't do it yet. I stayed drunk for about a week and a half, man, on that one and partying a lot, man, and I woke up in a stupor, man, and my sister told me, she says, you gotta go, man, or you're gonna die. You know, and she took me to Delano. I told her, if you'll take me to Delano, I'll get on the bus. And oh man, I took everything I could do to get on that bus. And I went to Texas. Called my dad every city, telling him, man, I can't do this, man. They're going to get me, man. As soon as I cross the state line, I know it. He says, there ain't nobody watching you, dude. What is wrong with you? You know, and it took me like 3 days to get there. Two and a half days, something like that. It was a long bus ride. And I get to my dad's, man, and they love me, man. They went and bought me clothes. When my stepmom seen the clothes that I had, she's like, oh my God. She said, we're going to get you some Wranglers, boy, and some cowboy boots. And I bought me some nice shirts. And everything was good for about 2 weeks. 2 weeks. I because I was still there, you know what I mean? I went to Texas with, I went too, you know, and I'm going to try to be good for my mom and them. I'm not going to, you know, my dad worked for Miller Beer, you know, so there's beer in that house every day. My stepmom is an alcoholic. She's a functioning alcoholic. I mean, she drinks as soon as she gets home until she passes out. So it's okay to drink in there, you know, so a little beer, you know, cool. As long as I ain't doing no dope, I'm going to be okay. It doesn't work like that for my brain. I don't understand. My body, my chemistry doesn't understand the difference of whatever it is. The alcohol hit my tongue. It's poison. I'm off to the races, man. My stepmom's like, where's all the beer? You know what I mean? I said, well, I think I drank a couple. She said, you drink like 9 beers out of that 12 pack. And I'm like, oh, I'll buy another one. You know, and that's just how I drink, you know. And so about 2 weeks, I get me a little job at McDonald's. They're going to go on this really nice, because they're normal. I mean, they're not normal, but they're kind of normal, you know. That's normal to me, man. They don't yell and scream and fight and have knockdown, drag out fights like, you know, my mom's boyfriend and shit did. You know, that's normal. They ain't yelling at each other, none of that. And they're going to go to someplace in South Carolina where they're going to golf for 3 weeks. 5 days a week for 3 weeks. And it's right on the beach, got a 3-story house. They show me pictures. And my dad's like, you can go. You know, we didn't, you know, you can go. You know, so I'm like, yeah, this is going to be kind of cool. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to get smashed on the beach and have some fun because it's okay to drink there. Well, I got that little McDonald's job. I got my first check and this girl had been, you know, pursuing me quite a bit about, I'd met her at the Dairy Queen when we did a food handler's card, they call it out there, man. And you know, she was real pretty and had on a mini skirt suit, like, and I asked her, because there was no seats. I'm like, man, can I sit here to eat my food? And she's like, oh, yeah, help yourself. And then she asked me where I was from, told her California. And, you know, and I wanted to, like, flash, like I was, you know, doing something. I told her, hey, you know, I got some good weed from California. And she instantly wanted to buy some. You know, she had a friend that wanted to buy some or something like that. And, I'm like, oh, no, I don't sell none of that. No, it ain't for sale. It's just personal. And so she gave me her number, and one thing led to another, man. And about a week later, man, we end up going to this bar called the Hurricane Harry's, man. And she asked me to let her friend try some or see it, you know. And I knew in the state of Texas, man, that marijuana, you go to jail for a long time, man. And we get in that bar, man, and I'm going to get smashed. You know, I want a drink. I'm going to get blitzed. And so I get us a pitcher of beer. I get a Beefeater's on the rocks and a Kamikaze. And we head to the table. You know, so before we get to the table, I've already done the Kamikaze. And as soon as we get to the table, man, I took 2 swigs of that Beefeater, and it's gone. Pulled me a beer, and she's got a beer, and she's looking at me like I'm crazy. And I down that beer and get another one, and I mean, I want another Beefeater's because I need to get to where I need to get so I feel okay. You know, and so I go, I'll be back. I'm going to go get another drink, all right? She's like, you need more? I'm like, yeah. And so I get to the bar, and the bartender tells me she's going to buy me a drink, you know. And I'm like, okay. So she buys me this drink, and she comes back, and I said, how do you drink it? She says, just slam it. So I'm like, damn, what do you call that? She says, that's called a screaming orgasm. I'm like, how? You know what I mean? I give her a big old howl. And so she gives me my other Beefeater and Kamikaze. And, you know, when I'm in this bar, it's a shit kicker bar. And I got on long Bermuda shorts, high top shoes. I got on the slingshot with like a pullover shirt that, I mean, I'm standing out like a sore thumb. All these dudes are looking at me like, what the hell? It's a college town, Texas A&M University's right there. But it was like a lot of cowboys and a lot of cowgirls too, man. But so we get back to the table and there's this guy there. And he's got his arm around her. And I'm like, am I at the right table? I'm like wondering if I'm at the right table. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? Is this your husband? You know what I mean? And she's like, no. I said, sir, is that your sister? And he's like, no. I said, your girlfriend? No. I'm like, well, is this how you guys get down in Texas? He says, that's my date. And, I'd appreciate if you take your arm off of her. You know, and so he, like, takes his arm off, and I push him. And he tells me, you better chill out or I'll place you under arrest, sir. Well, I'm thinking that he's trying to scare me. Like, citizen's arrest. You know what I mean? So I'm drunk. I'm drunk. So the best thinking, like, one up on him, like, crossing the border, you know what I mean? I'm going to go one up on him. I'm like, really? I said, I'm undercover from California. My badge number is 559. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think I scared the shit out of him, man. He says, I apologize, sir. I apologize. And he backs up and he leaves. I said, I sure did that, didn't I? Yeah, I thought I fixed him, man. He's gone. The problem's out of there. Well, about, I don't know how long it was, 3-4 minutes or something, man. I see all this commotion, and maybe it's 10 minutes, I don't know, but this dude is leading a pack of cops. And they're coming to get me. I'm like, oh, shit. And I dug down, and I take off this thing. I got on a slingshot only, and I got a Bermuda shorts, you know, and real easy to ID. So I run into the bathroom, get my wallet out. As long as I don't have my ID on me, they ain't gonna be able to ID me. So I put it in my boot and my high-top shoes down there. So now I'm walking a little kind of weird. And I go out of the bar, try to get out of there, man. And, dude, there was cop cars everywhere out front. I'm like, oh God. There was a payphone, so I just go in that payphone and close the door. I'm cool right there, right? That's what I'm thinking. Call my little baby brother and I tell him, JB, come and get me. I think the cops are gonna get me. He's like, bro, you alright? I said, man, just come and get me. And as soon as I see my brother pulling up, I went out the door, man, and as soon as I went out the door, they're like, sir, come here, and now the lies begin. I won't tell them who I am. You know, and in the state of Texas, anytime you go in a bar out there, they stamp your hand. I don't care if you're 80 years old, they want ID. That's just how they roll. And that's what that officer is telling me, at least. And he says, so you got ID, you didn't get in here without ID. I'm like, I don't got no ID, man. They let me in, man. He's like, who are you? I said, that's for you to find out, man. And I said, I ain't broke no laws. Why are you detaining me? You know, whatever. I don't know what I was telling this guy, but because I had some real brilliant thinking going on. And I was drunk. I mean, I was drunk. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, man, I really haven't drank a whole lot since then. Some. But if alcohol makes me want to be a cop, I don't want no part of it. You know what I mean? So I grew up wanting to be an outlaw, man. I wanted to be a drug dealer. I wanted to be a guy that you know, had wads of cash in his pocket. I wanted to have all the girls. You know, I wanted to, I don't know what I wanted, man. All I know is I didn't want to see my mother getting beat up. I wanted to kill my stepdad at a real young age. And I went to my very first meeting, man, in 1984. That was a long time ago. And you know, the crazy part about it is when I was in that room, I kind of felt at home and I could relate to some of the, you know, what they were saying. But I wasn't about to stop, you know. And they charged me for impersonating a public servant. And they tried to give me 10 years in the state of Texas. I embarrassed the shit out of my dad. He was a pillar of the community, man. Worked for Miller Beer forever. He knew everybody in that town. Thank God one of his good friends at the Texas Hall of Fame there, her son was a district attorney. And my dad pulled a juice card, you know, did me a solid, you know what I mean, and got me out of jail about 4 months later, you know, all for saying I'm a police officer, or I'm going to arrest you if you, you know, don't chill out, or something, so once again, I'm out, I'm going to do it different, you know, again, you know, but it's okay to drink, Dad said it's cool to drink, just, you know, don't do drugs. I said, really? You ain't tripping that I just got arrested for drinking? He's like, you don't have a problem with alcohol. You got a problem because you're crazy. Yeah, that's your problem. It ain't the alcohol. You know, so they put me in this little outpatient program. I did it for a little while, and my dad insists that I call the state of California to tell them that I'd left. And I'm like, okay, Dad, if that's what you want me to do, I'll do it. So I called out here. I told Mr. Scroggins when they got him on the phone. He's like, I don't even have you in my caseload. He said, I'll call you back. He called me back about an hour later and says, Mr. Staples, you haven't reported since you got out. He says, you ain't even supposed to be out of the county, much less two states away or whatever. He says, you need to be here ASAP. I'm like, well, I got a job and I'm working and I don't want to come back. You know what I mean? And he's like, I'll tell you what, you got 90 days to be here. And he got on the counter, he says, you need to be here at my office at this date, and you got an $1,800 fine, and you better bring the money for it. And he said, "You're probably going to jail." I'm like, "Well, that's a really good way to try to get me to come back." You know what I mean? I said, "I don't want to go to jail, you know." And but, you know, I was doing that outpatient program, and I, for some reason, I didn't drink, you know. I did their little meetings, and I started feeling good again. Man, the program started working some. But I wasn't doing those steps. I was lying to you, telling you I read the book. And I'm going to tell you what, this guy right here, I read the book like 3 times since you asked me to be the speaker, and I can't even tell you what I read, to be honest. I have been going batshit crazy for the last month and a half, man, because I want to please people. I want to do good, man. I want to be a success. And you know, what I have found in Alcoholics Anonymous, man, is I look around the rooms right here, and I see a lot of successes. You know, that's what I want to be. I just want to be a success. I want to finish something that I start, man. You know, I'm the type of guy that if I tell you I'm going to do something, most of the time I back the play, man. You know, I can honestly tell you that I've done time for somebody else. And I'm not a snitch. I don't, you know, snitches get stitches and end up in ditches, you know, stuff like that. And I live by that rule. I mean, I live by it for the fullest. You know, and today, man, I tell you what, man, this is hard to say. But you harm my house, or you harm somebody I love, you're probably going to jail. You know what I mean? That's probably what's going to happen. They're here to serve and protect me too, man. And I've had to change this way of thinking by doing the steps, man, and getting rid of some defects. Like, a lot of stuff I was taught over the years was wrong. You know, Wayne told me, man, when we were doing the steps, he says, "You're going to be an easy case." He says, "All you got to do is change everything, dude, because you're fucked up." That's my language. But that was his exact words. That's why I'm replacing it. Or not, I want to use what he said. You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous and the other programs, man, I have found a life that is unimaginable. My Uncle David Looper, man, I never knew what he meant, man, when he said that once you complete the steps, man, that you get rocketed into another dimension of existence, man, and you become spiritually fit, and you can do anything you want to do, man. And I'm going to tell you right now that I believe that with all my heart, man. I rock that red truck that he owned, man. I drive it with pride. And I go places, man, that most people probably wouldn't go, because this book tells me that I got to work with other alcoholics, whether they're drinking or not. And I want to work with the sick ones. That's my calling. You know? And that's what I do, man. I'm glad you're here, Chuck. Bray, it makes my heart full, man, to see you. You know, Mark, thanks for sharing earlier. You know, I couldn't do this without you. You know, you're an inspiration. You know, because, well, I'm going to tell you what, man, we drank a lot in high school. I went to school every day, man. My mom was so mad at me. She asked me, she says, "Son, I drop you off at school every day, and they're calling me, telling me you ain't been to none of your classes." I'm like, "There's got to be a mistake, Mom." I swear I went. But you know what I did every day? I'd get to class. I'd have about 50 joints. And my friends would want to go smoke weed, and we'd go buy some Yukon Jack and like a case of Coors Light, Silver Bullet. And that's what we'd do, man. We'd party foul, we'd pour out half that Coors Light, and we'd fill the rest of it with Yukon Jack, boy. And we could be off to the races. You know, it made me become 10 foot tall and bulletproof, man. It made me fit in. You know, I have sponsees, man, that some of them are doing the dues, and some of them aren't, but I've been blessed here recently with a new sponsee. I'm temporary right now. It's amazing when, you know, what you've been taught, you know, you get to pass it down and they actually do what you ask them to do. You know, call you every day, read the book. You know, now that he's read the book, it's time to start them steps. You know, because that's what I was told to do. And I get to pass it along. You know, in order to keep this, man, we have to give it away. You know, my dream, man, is to be able to one day walk back into a prison and carry a message up in there to let somebody that's just like me know that we too, or he too, can stop and stay stopped. You know, I quit many times, man. But what I'm doing now is I'm staying stopped. And that's by applying the 12 steps in my life on a daily basis, man. It ain't about tomorrow, next year. I make plans, but I don't plan the outcome. You know, and there's somebody in the room that knows that I go batshit crazy when we got a day or two off work. You know, I think it's the end of the world. You know, for one, I don't know what to do during the daytime when I'm off work. You know what I mean? My house is pretty clean. You know, I believe in saving water, so I let all the grass die. Sorry, Uncle Dave. You know what I mean? But that's just how it is, man. I have certain things. I recycle, man. I didn't care about nothing before. I care about the earth. I want my daughter to have something later in life, or her kids, you know, or something. And so if I can do a little teeny part, you know, if one person does something, like one alcoholic carrying the message to another alcoholic, that's how it works. Says we can't do this alone. Anyways, thank you for letting me share.